Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
Mr. Sandman,
you get the idea?
Bring me a dream.
It's on the internet.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Go on.
Give him two lips like roses and clover.
It's a great program.
And tell him that his lonesome nights are over, Sandman.
What is it?
It's exactly what I need.
It's a slam dunk.
It's great.
It's like no cheese I've ever tasted.
Please turn on your magic beam.
Oh, here he comes.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a
Here's David Hollander.
The market has hit a rough patch, triggered by a shift in the Fed's policy. So how should you be investing right now? Well, today we're going to do a special show where we're going to dive a little deeper into investing and some things you need to be doing right now. And then, do you remember that Secure Act 19 where they changed your RMD from 70 and a half to 72? Well, they're at it again. Find out what's coming and later. Remember that Proposition 19 where you wanted to give your house to your kids? And if you didn't do it in time, you lost your basis that you're paying your taxes on each year? Well, we have something new. It's not too late for you if you still want to do that. All that and so much more coming your way this morning on Protect Your Assets. Good morning. I am David Hollander, also known as the Sandman around here. And that's because I help my listeners sleep well at night by answering their most troubled legal or financial questions each week right here on KNBR. And that's because I am a financial advisor and an attorney. So we've had a lot of economic activity this week. It really was not a normal week by any means. It looked like the Fed was changing their policy and stocks started to get a little bit wild this week. And we haven't seen that for some time. I mean, think about it. It's been months since we've seen any sort of a move below 1%. And this week, sure enough, it started. We've been talking about this for a while. And it's nothing new. So we're going to get into that today. We're going to talk about growth and value and where you should be looking at investing your money right now. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So let's get started. So the Dow had a pretty tough week, down 3.4%. Haven't seen that for a while. S&P was off 1.9%. NASDAQ down 0.3, and the 10-year Treasury, well, it dropped below 150 to settle at 1.43%. Oil, you've been hearing it. I've been talking about it. Oil was $71.67 a barrel, and that was good. So anyway, what happened? Well, this was an interesting week. We've been talking about this for a while. I've been saying that the June Fed FOMC meeting was going to be one to watch, and it sure was. Wednesday, we had Chairman Powell come out and start talking about their meeting, and it did provide some what we call hawkish surprises and created new volatility in the market that we just haven't seen for some time. And some people were equating this to the 2013. You remember back to 2013 where we had the taper tantrum and the markets dropped a little over 5% that week. And so that's something that people were comparing this to. Back then we saw a 5.8% pullback, and it lasts 23 days. And so people are saying, well, maybe this is the beginning of something like that, because now the Fed seems to be changing policy. But I don't know. Let's take a look at it and see what actually is going on there. So I think the historic Fed accommodation, right? We've been talking about these pillars that are supporting the market. And one of them is the Fed accommodating lower interest rates. And so that market pillar, I think, is still intact overall, but there's cracks. There's more cracks that we've talked about in the past. And here's some more to add to that pillar. You can see cracks appearing on the wall. And now what it looks like is that we could be very well seeing a rate hike. In other words, rates going north, which, again, stocks don't like, as early as December 2022. That seems a long way away, but for so long they were talking about not seeing it at all. So now December 22 is what we're seeing. Now, looking at the nearer-term market impact of what happened this week, again, the more hawkish than expected FOMC decision that came out Wednesday, It is to limit the market multiple going forward. You know, I've been talking about this for a while, this market multiple and stock prices. And so now that we have rate hikes, certainly possible at the end of 22, and as they said, two hikes likely in 23, it's very unlikely that Treasury yields are going to move decidedly lower. So even though we've seen the 10-year, and again, I'm trying to make this make sense to you. There's a lot of data. And that's why I'm taking my time this morning to go through it with you, is that we've seen mortgage rates. They're tied to the 10-year Treasury. And so the 10-year Treasury was moving north. We saw it get as high as a little over 175. I think it was 177. And this week it came back down because of this discussion. But I think it's likely that that's going to stay above where we are now. I don't think we're going to see the lower rates like I was talking about a few weeks ago. So what that means is, since it's unlikely that Treasury yields are going to go much lower, I think it means that the S&P 500 is going to have to be readjusted. And so I've been talking about that this year, saying that I called 4,200, as you may remember, at the beginning of the year, and we've got there. Now we've come back down a little bit below that again. It seems to be this little trading pattern. But I was talking about 4,900, you may remember, a couple of weeks ago. Well, I think that's over. I think that the result of what we just heard this week removes the possibility that we're going to see substantial rally in stocks over the next coming months. So what does that mean? Well, I think it means that we're going to see an S&P 500 around 4,500. So I'll readjust back down to 4,500 as the potential for year end on the S&P. And so what it means is you're looking at a 20-time multiple on where we are now. And so what's going to be really important coming up, and what we want to pay attention to, is the second quarter earnings seasons for stocks. And as you know, that starts here in July. So we've got a couple of weeks to go before we're going to start to see the earnings coming out of the companies. And it's going to be really important, because those earnings will then drive the multiple that I'm talking about, 20 times earnings, given the new economic forecast from the Fed. So that means that what you need to do is you need to have a balanced portfolio. I'm going to talk a lot about that this morning. A lot of people have been saying, well, the value trade's over and cyclicals are over, and now you've got to go to growth and tech. And that's why you're seeing the move in that happening these last couple of weeks. It's been pretty substantial if you look at the percentages and what's been going on. But I'm going to disagree with that, and I'm going to explain this morning more about that. But I think now is the time more than ever where a balanced portfolio, and what does that really mean? I'm going to explain that next segment, what a balanced portfolio really is. I think that's healthy. That's a healthy allocation to have. And as you see these dips that are occurring in the cyclical sectors, what do I mean by that? Well, the financials, the commodities, ex-oil, the industrials, certainly value. You know, you got your large cap, your mid caps, and your small cap value. Those are all exposure that you need. And so when they get hurt this week, like look at the financials this week, they got rocked. It's time to reevaluate your position and see how you're doing. And maybe you've made some profits. Many clients I spoke to this week who had a lot of profit in tech. And for those of you who didn't live through the dot-com bust of 2000, tech wreck, we called it, now's the time to think about it. Because sure, tech is a part of our life, but as I've told a lot of folks, this is not the same as last year. Last year, remember, we were all locked up. We were all dependent on technology to communicate to the outside world. Things are changing. The economy, as you know, is opening back up. Things are getting back to normal. People are moving around. And I'm not saying technology is over, it's gone, but the valuations are up there on some of these things. And we'll talk more about what that means next segment and how you need to think about that. But the bottom line is, the Fed getting a little more hawkish than what we hoped a couple weeks ago is not a bearish game changer, but it does limit the path to sustainably higher stock prices. And it leaves the market right now vulnerable to any sort of negative headlines that could come up and cause a further pullback. So as long as the four pillars are still intact, which they are, until we see one of those get destroyed, it's opportunity in my mind to add to these cyclical and value positions, despite what you might be hearing in the media. I mean, yesterday was full of all sorts of information about what you should be doing, but, you know, I always say, what do they know? So the reality is, check where you are, check your positions, see that you've got this balanced exposure. And if you need to take some profits in some of these technology stocks that have done incredibly well, then don't feel bad about it. Do it and buy some of the areas that got hit this week. Why would you do that? Well, we're going to talk about that in the next segment, because right now that's the question. Is the cyclical value trade over, and do you need to be moving everything you have to growth and technology right now? A serious argument going on right now, and I don't think so. And we're going to explain why that is when we come back. So keep it tuned right here if you want to find out what you need to know about the market next week and the week after that. You are listening to The Sandman on the Protect Your Assets Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You can ask The Sandman questions and hear this show, Protect Your Assets, hands-free, anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, The Sandman.
Welcome back. I am David Hollander, also known as The Sandman, and you are listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And this past week, we saw the Fed shift policy, and the markets didn't like it. The Dow was off 3.4% for the week, and NASDAQ, S&P both down as well. So if you're only skimming the headlines, and you're probably wondering what is going on, because it's been so tranquil for so long, and now all of a sudden something seems like it's wrong. In fact, I get this question all the time. It just feels like something's about to happen and we're going to crack and it's going to all fall apart. So I figured this morning it was a good time to talk about where we are right now in this market cycle. And how do you define what's going on? Why have things shifted from one sector to another? What I'm talking about and what the discussion's been about in the financial circles this week has been value versus growth. Value seen a very nice rise, as you know, through the year. And if you don't know what that means, I'll explain in a minute. From since last September through just about May, as compared to growth. And people ask me all the time, well, what's the difference between value and growth? It really comes down to stocks. We're talking about stocks. We're talking about typically U.S. stocks. And a value stock is something that is a good company that produces good products, consistent, good cash flow when you look at their balance sheet. They actually have earnings and they actually make money. And when you look at the multiple that the stock is trading at, in other words, if it's like at $20, the multiples are typically very low, usually 8 to 9, 10 times earnings is what you typically see on a value type stock. So very low multiple in comparison to what they're earning. Now, another example that I've heard quite often is if you're a shopper, maybe you like to go into a high-end store. Or if you're like me, maybe you like nice cars. And so maybe you see a, brand new Lamborghini Huracan. It's in the newspaper and you see it trading for $35,000. And you say, well, that car, you know, is a $200,000 car. I can buy it for $35,000. What's wrong with it? You immediately think maybe it's salvaged. Maybe it's been a big accident. Maybe you're just getting a motor. Well, no, you're getting the whole car. That's value. That's value investing. You'd buy it because you know what it is. You know, it has the potential to appreciate or be worth more depending on where we are in the economy. And so you buy it. That's the same thing as a value purchase of a value stock. Growth, on the other hand, growth is somewhat irrational. Growth are companies that sometimes don't really make any money. They have great products. They have a great service. Seems like everybody has to have it now. And when you actually look at their financials, sure, they make some money, but the amount of debt and the amount of burn they're going through every month is way more than what they're making. And you're wondering, how could they be worth that kind of money compared to something else? Great example of just what I'm talking about would say you compare Tesla to Toyota or GM. How could Tesla be worth more than one of those? Well, because it's a hot stock. People like the car. People like the company. People like Elon Musk. People like it. So on the traditional sense, you could call a company like that a growth company. So what do you do? Where do you invest between value and growth in different times of the year or different times of markets or different years in cycles? It's a really good question. And so this past week, a lot of people were saying, well, the value trade or the cyclical sector, which is part of value, commodities, etc., is it over? And so what I'm talking about, particularly when you talk about these type of sectors, the specifics are financials, energy, industrials, materials, those are called cyclicals. Commodities are another type. Typically, they've been battered, as you know. They've done better lately, but they were pretty beat up. And these dropped sharply on Thursday as investors started to reverse the post-Fed hawkish, relatively hawkish again. They've been so quiet for so long, and now they're saying something a little negative that they may be raising rates in the end of 22, December 22, and two rates in 23 possibly. And so this rotation became aggressive. It became aggressive and started moving into growth and tech, which typically are higher yielding and defensive when these sort of things happen. And so I want to talk this morning about why this happened and whether it implies that the cyclical value trade that I keep talking about is over. And if you should just jump back into large growth tech and overweight that right now, which a lot of people are starting to say. And so I don't think so. I'm going to tell you right now, the answer is no to that question. I don't think you should do that. And let me explain why. I want to go over my reasoning this morning so you understand the difference between growth and value right now and how you need to be thinking about this and how you should be looking at your accounts. Because growth has recently outperformed, maybe the last couple weeks, compared to value. But here's why. Here's why these things are happening. Reason number one is the Fed is turning less dovish. And because they're doing that, the economic recovery won't be as powerful as we thought it might be a couple weeks ago. It's really that simple. And inflation won't run as hot as people were fearing the previous weeks. Remember, we talked a lot about that. So that's what people are thinking. So it's true, the Fed is turning less dovish, but not to the point where it's going to have really a major impact on the strength of this recovery that we're looking at right now. And I just want to be clear about that. I think there's zero chance that QE is reduced at all before November. And even then, the Fed is going to still add more money to their balance sheet well into 2022. So think about it this way. All that cash is what's stimulating an economy that is continuing to gather more momentum as the country continues to return to normal. In fact, this week we saw a little bit of a pullback in the growth sector when it comes to jobs. The report was a little off. It wasn't as rosy as we had thought. So it just shows that this momentum, and remember, it's momentum. This momentum is building building velocity. It's kind of like, again, I love race cars and cars, and so it's kind of like a four-cylinder motor. You know, you really got to get that thing going and throw that into the curves in order to catch those big V8s who can just put their foot down and move away from you because they have so much more power than you do. You always wonder why do the smaller engines seem to keep up with these cars on the tracks where you have a lot of corners. It's because of momentum. It's because you build a lot of speed, you carry that speed through the corner, and you're able to keep your speed at a constant level. And so that's perfectly example of what's going on now in the economy. The Fed, all the pillars, the four pillars that are holding up this economy are building momentum. And if you look at history, which is really what I love to study, particularly when it comes to markets, history shows that cyclicals and commodities do well when the Fed is raising rates. And that's because when the Fed raises rates, because the economic growth is strong and inflations are high, that's the only way, one of the major ways they have to slow things down. So bottom line, I think it's a mistake right now for someone with a time horizon beyond a month, let's say, to be selling cyclicals, value, or commodities right now because they think the expansion is going to slow down due to this Fed meeting that we just saw on Wednesday. I think that's a big mistake. So in reality, what we're likely looking at right now is the early innings, if you like baseball, early innings of an economic expansion. And the risks certainly remain more skewed towards the economy that's going to run too hot than one where we're going to face with years of slow growth. That's where I think we are right now. That's reason number one. Now, what's reason number two? Why did cyclicals fall so much this past week? Well, essentially, the thesis is that inflation was peaking, that it was going to go much higher. But I think that's changed. I think we've seen inflation peak. It's tough to call, but are we at the top of the peak of inflation, meaning the rate at which it runs is just about there? It's hard to measure that, certainly. And the intensity of this recovery could be peaking, but we don't view that right now as a catalyst to just abandon all your cyclical sectors and your value and go to growth. Because as I've said, inflation is likely peaking. We're not getting 5% year-over-year consumer price inflation. And the pace of the economic rebound is also likely peaking because, as you know, this week we're going to see GDP, and it's not likely to stay at 7%, particularly in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. But as you know from working out, peaking from unsustainable levels is not the same thing as returning to no growth or no gain. It's just a little more painful, right? Nope. If you work out, you know what I'm talking about. To get that little extra level, you gotta keep putting the energy in. So if I want to put it a little differently, I think inflation may drop to, say, 3% per year, if you want to use that in your financial models. And GDP, same, maybe around 3% per year. But that's still much higher than it was before this pandemic started, and it's much higher than it was back when tech growth were dominating the cyclical value trade. And that's what I want to talk about, because when you look at growth over the last 10 years, certainly growth has had its day, and many more days than value has, and it was very depressing for the value investor for a long time. But those of you who stuck with it, those of you who hanged in there, those of you know what just happened these last September through May trade was extremely strong, and it outperformed handily the growth in tech sector, and that's because of this shift that's occurring. And the Fed is stuffing the economy with liquidity. We have a lot of money right now. It's an ocean of money, if you will, from all the stimulus in addition, that's sloshing around, and it's sloshing between one trade, the cyclical value trade, and the growth tech trade. That's where it's moving back and forth. And that's what you've seen the last couple of weeks, is that money moving around and therefore driving the prices on these different areas higher and lower. That's all it is. And so I don't think it's over. I don't think that we're slowing down. I don't think the economy is all of a sudden going to run out of gas. No, I think if you're going to bet that way, I think you're making a big mistake. So be careful. So coming up next, it's time for our They Say segment, where they say inflation is the number one killer that's going to take down this market. And they say inflation may still be here. Is that true? Well, coming up next, we're going to get into it. How do you look at inflation? How do you measure it? How do you really know if it's coming? So much more coming your way on Protect Your Assets. We'll be right back.
Now you can hear the show Protect Your Assets hands-free anytime on your smart speaker or Android device. Just say, hey, Google, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Learn more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
If you only skimmed the headlines last week, well, you're probably left with the sense that the markets hit a rough patch. After all, the Dow finished the week off 3.4%, S&P off almost 2%. And so you're wondering, what's going on? What's the Fed doing? How are they shifting policy here and it's affecting the market? Well, we do have a webinar, a live webinar coming up Tuesday, June 22nd. And my host is going to be Apollo Lupescu, if you know Apollo from Dimensional Fund Advisors, excellent fund shop here in the United States. Apollo will be on with me at 4 o'clock. If you'd like to register for that free webinar where we're going to be talking about investing in this current market, you can register right now for that by going to our website, libertygroupllc.com. Click on the events tab and you'll see the event right there. You can register for it. It's absolutely free. And if you want to tell a friend about it, I'd appreciate it. So thank you very much. Now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? There's only one man with all the answers. And here he is, David Hollander, the Sandman.
So here's one they say. They say that inflation is on its way, and you need to think about your investment strategy right now as a result. Well, is that true? Is inflation really here? This week was full of financial talk from the Fed, and so the key with inflation remains whether it's temporary. And if inflation is temporary, then the outlook for stocks is positive. But if it's not, then the outlook could be negative. And that's possibly why we saw some pullback this week. So one of the best ways to tell whether inflation is going from temporary, which many have said is that's where it is, to structural, is by watching inflation expectations. And so the we've been talking about this for weeks, and I've told you at least once a month we'll get into this where we look at different areas. And that's because I like to look at expectations, because if consumers and investors begin to expect structurally higher inflation, they'll act to lock in prices right now, which means more cash chasing finite goods and services, and that creates inflation. So if inflation expectations rise and remain elevated, that's a signal that inflation is not temporary, and you're going to want to adjust your portfolio according to that. So the areas where I like to look are three. And the first is the five-year Treasury inflation protected securities versus the Treasury break-even. So what we just saw is the five-year TIPS Treasury break-evens are the also known as the bonds market's estimate of annual inflation over the next 5 years. And for this to ring an alarm bell, I'd need to see this decidedly over 3% for multiple months. So the update for this month is that, happily, while inflation expectations are near multi-highs, and we could be peaking, as I just said in the last segment, I think inflation expectations have spent the last 2 months essentially chopping sideways, particularly when you look at this number. So that's good. That alarm bell hasn't gone off yet. Okay, so no concern there. The next area that we want to look at is the University of Michigan consumer sentiment over 1 year. And for this to ring a bell, I'd need to see inflation move, again, this number move above the 3.5% number for several months. Now, the May survey came out And it did rise above the 3.5%, so the bell's starting to ring. It was 3.7. But the key here is whether it can hold this level and keep rising for the next 2 to 3 months. So again, you know we're going to be paying attention to that, which would imply that inflation expectations are starting to become ingrained in consumers' minds. And this could be what the Fed was talking about last week. Remember, they mentioned that, again, this inflation number could be a peak. It could be a peak where we've reached the summit and now we're starting to decline again at a gradual rate, but possibly there's not much more higher to go. We'll see. So again, that's what that number is about. And the next number we look at, which again is how you rate inflation in my mind, is the University of Michigan consumer sentiment over 5 years, a little longer period of time. And to ring an alarm bell there, I'd need to see the 5-year inflation expectation move well above 3%. And if the 5-year expectations converge with the 1-year expectation, then that's going to be a problem, because it shows that consumers are viewing this inflation as structural, not transitory. And so right now, just so you know, the number just came out and we're still below the 3% on the 5-year. So in the short term, I think inflation pressures are peaking, but the more important longer term expectations remain generally grounded. And therefore, I don't see that as a threat. And that's good. Now, let's turn to Secure Act 2.0, shall we? In 2019, you may remember this, the lawmakers in their astute wisdom passed the Secure Act. And this changed when you have to take your RMD, your required minimum distribution, and how your family will inherit that asset when you die. And guess what? They're at it again. A new bill has been introduced. And what it says in this is something that I want to share with you this morning, because I want you to get prepared for this. The original Secure Act, we'll call it Secure Act 1.0, raised the age at which you must start taking your required minimum distribution from the traditional IRA and 401k from age 70 and a half to age 72. In fact, I had a client last week who we were going over, and she said, oh, I'm going to take it at 70 and a half. And I said, what? And she said, oh, out of my IRA. I said, no, it's 72 now. Really? Yes. It's okay. Cool. That's great. But this new proposed legislation is going to change it again. So, you know, you're playing Monopoly right now with your family and you feel like you know what you're doing, and all of a sudden they're changing the rules again. Yep. That's what's happening. So this new legislation, which you knew was coming, and I'm going to call it Secure Act 2.0, is going to again raise the age to begin taking your RMD. But there's a catch. Okay, here we go. What is it? Well, they're going to raise it to age 75, which sounds like a good thing to do. But if you do that, you have to take it out over 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that means you could have more time to let your money grow bigger. But as you start to take it out, guess what? Your withdrawals are going to be larger and taxes will probably be higher. So you're probably going to pay more money in tax. Doesn't sound so good to me. How does this work? Well, right now, this is what they're proposing. The age for the RMD would initially increase to 73 starting January 1st, 2022. That gives us some insight into when this new laws regarding taxes may go into effect. Then to age 74 on January 1st, 2029, and then rise to age 75 January 1st, 2032. So some time there to think about this, but some good news that's coming out of this is they're trying to change the penalty, because you know if you miss your RMD or if you do it incorrectly, the penalty on what you should have taken would be 50%. It's one of the highest penalties you can pay the government when you do something incorrectly. But under this new proposal, they're going to reduce that to 25%. And if you correct that mistake in a timely manner, which most of you figure out and do, then they're going to reduce it to a 10% penalty. And so that's certainly good news. And that's the right direction, I'd say, to be moving things overall. But coming up next, this is super exciting. You probably thought it was too late for you to do anything with your primary residence and leaving it to your son or daughter, because of Proposition 19. If you know what I'm talking about and you want to do something like that, you're definitely going to want to tune in, because my next guest has a solution to an otherwise unknown problem. You are listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with David Hollander. We'll be right back.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show Protect Your Assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. Can you imagine playing the Monopoly board game with your family? In the middle of the game, they change the rules? Well, that's what it feels right now with all these proposed tax law changes that are in our midst. By the way, happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. I know it's tomorrow, but in any event, hope you have a great Father's Day weekend and enjoy your family. Want to wish them happy birthdays. Happy birthday to Robert Raw, Rabbi Daniel Goldblatt, Leanne Gray, Greg Swain, Bill Burgess, Constantine Carl Lemus, David Carl, Tom Dial, Cheryl Terribini, and Serena Miller. Happy birthday to all of you. So I have a special guest with us this morning, Gary Lieberman. As those of you who know, we work together, and we have a special announcement for you this morning about what's going on. So, Gary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great. Thank you. So let's start out, Gary, with some of the things we're seeing a lot right now, particularly with the estate law change that's coming. So we know Senator Sanders has introduced a bill, and it has to do with adjusting the estate tax. And so we're hearing right now it's going to go possibly down to $3.5 million from the current high water mark of $11.7 million. So essentially that means that somebody's going to lose a lot of assets if they die and try and transfer to their family, right?
That's absolutely correct.
So what can we do today to make sure that if someone, say, has an estate that's, oh, say, $8 or $9 million when you add your real estate and your 401k and all your stuff, what can they do right now to protect themselves so they don't lose all that money to estate tax, which I hear is going to be about 40%?
Yeah, it is. It actually, they're going to lower the tax rate so that people are going to end up paying more. There are a couple of things we can do. The most important thing is we can take an existing trust, living trust, and we can make amendments to it, which will enable us to plan around this new tax law. There are certain things we can do within that trust. We can set up a sub-trust. We can set up an irrevocable trust. There are a number of different things we can do. We have created a very special type of trust, which basically incorporates four or five different types of trust into one trust document. It also will get around Proposition 19, which I know you mentioned a little bit at the intro here.
I did. So let's talk about that. So let's just break it down simply, because I know we do have a couple of minutes here. I want to first and say that if someone's got a problem where they've got more than $3.5 million, let's say it's, you know, $2 or $3 or $4 million above that, what Gary's saying here is we can take that now. We can shift that into different types of trust vehicles that exist. It's actually pretty simple to do. I mean, there's lots of work we have to do, but it's a pretty simple process. What really drives some of that is what you're trying to leave for your family, how you want to control that while you're alive. Maybe you want income and so forth. So different ways to do that, but you can do it now, and we're requesting you do it now, or at least have the conversation now, because as we get into October, it's probably going to start to get very busy, and we usually do first come, first serve, and we can only accommodate so many. So we would just request that if you are in that position right now, please reach out to us and find out more about this. Now, let's get to Prop 19. Prop 19, as you may recall, Gary was on with me towards the end of last year. We were talking about Prop 19. And in a nutshell, what did Prop 19 do, Gary?
Well, essentially, Prop 19 did away with the exclusion of property tax reassessment between parents and child. But before Prop 19, a transfer of real property between parent and child, particularly a principal residence, was exempt from reassessment. So whatever the property tax that mom and dad were paying is the same property tax that the children will pay inheriting the property. That's pre-Proposition 19. After Proposition 19, that's gone. That's all out the window. There is no longer an exemption from reassessment. So to pass the property from parents to child, it's going to be reassessed at current market value.
Right. So if someone's used to paying, say, $4,000 or $5,000 a year in taxes, now all of a sudden they're sitting on a $2.5 million property, they're most likely, their child, when they receive that property, is going to have to start paying $30,000, $35,000, $40,000 a year in taxes just for the property tax.
Could be. Absolutely.
And that's going to go on for years and years and years. And so your children may not be expecting that sort of a bill. You may not like that kind of a bill for them. And so you're wondering, well, what can I do now? Because I heard the date was February 16th, right? Wasn't that when the date cut off?
Yeah, absolutely. Many people scurried around to get some estate planning done before that. And many of our clients, as you know, Dave, did that. But February 16th is passed. So the estate planning techniques that we were able to use then to get around Prop 19, we can no longer use. We now have a new trust that we've created that basically, without going into a lot of detail, basically gets around Proposition 19.
Wow, that's incredible. I'd like to give a big thanks to the Protect Your Assets team for putting together a great show today. My executive producer, Kevin Renfer, network manager, Danny, and of course, all the fabulous producers back there doing all the work and answering these calls, Felicia, Brett, and Phil, because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. You've been listening to the Protect Your Assets show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
All calls have been screened. Callers should not expect their conversations with David Hollander on the radio or with staff to be held in confidence. And that legal information provided on the air is not intended to be a substitute for callers hiring their own lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Proper advice depends on complete analysis of all the facts and circumstances. The information given on this program is in the nature of general financial comment and cannot be relied upon as pertaining to your specific financial situation. California Life Agent number 0B48569. Listeners should consult their own financial advisor or conduct their own due diligence before making any financial decisions. The preceding program was paid for by Liberty Group, LLC. And the views and the opinions of the host do not represent those of this station or its ownership. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.